the Million Dollar Mortgage Experience Podcast.
All right, welcome to today's episode. We're here with Chris and Elena Groves. They are the CEO and COO of Groves Capital, a residential and commercial lender based in San Diego, California. Thanks for coming on, guys.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
Absolutely. So tell us about your story. How'd you get into the mortgage business?
It's her fault.
Your fault.
It's her fault.
The blame rests on Elena.
You can start it. You can start it.
So, you know, I was in mortgage, gosh, I want to say close to like 18, 19 years at this point. And so, you know, originally in kind of the sales and then in bankruptcy when the market fell out and then back into sales. And then, you know, we always got along really well with everything that we did. And then we started talking about, you know, why don't we also transition into real estate? And then he got his real estate license, but then became a broker. Then we started working together. And then you can finish the second half.
Yeah, like most loan officers, she was popping around, at different businesses. Like, oh, this one's good. And then next, no, they didn't have good products. The pricing wasn't good or support wasn't there. So I saw her jump probably seven different entities in the span of 3 years, and it kind of just drove me nuts. I'm like, there's got to be someone that has a good business model. And I started trying to look for it, and I really couldn't find what we were looking for.
And this is like years of already working together at this point.
Yeah, you know? I was already doing real estate, and she was already doing lending. So, and then we started doing transactions together and realized, oh my God, we're actually pretty efficient as a team at this, because most lenders I talk to are just slow. They never get back to me. It drove me freaking nuts.
And we were already like dating and married at this point. Yeah.
It's easy to get back to him.
Yeah.
Well, also, I'm a little OCD, and she's on her shit. So she was on top of it. And then I had an opportunity to take over a corporate position with Keller Williams, and she's like, you should take it. It's going to be more balance.
My least favorite word
in life. So we ended up taking a trip to Costa Rica right after, you know, we had that offer, and we came back and decided we're going to take control of our lives, and we opened up Groves Capital. So we've been operational for about 8 years. And mainly it was for us initially. We wanted to never say no. To our clients, we wanted to have the best solution. So, you know, for us, like I'm always going out and networking. I wanted a platform that I could facilitate any kind of client, any kind of transaction. And obviously as we've expanded and grew into a space, we just, you know, work with close to 200 different lenders in the space at this point. So I never like to say no. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of always the goal for our company, is find a solution above all. And then we really focus on being a virtual company. I ran big companies in the past and owned gyms, and I hated having huge overhead and big numbers to bring in every month, because that's going to take away from, you know, the rates I'm going to offer my clients, because we got to pay for that overhead and we give my loan officers less income. So I wanted to be as virtual as possible. So we were one of the first companies to really pioneer the virtual platform. Mm-hmm. And obviously when COVID hit, it was put us in the perfect spot, because most, you know, I started recruiting people like, I don't want to work at home with my spouse. I'm like, yeah, who'd want to do that? And then when COVID hit, you know, 6 months in, everyone's like, okay, I kind of like this now. And then, you know, we really blasted off when that hit and just really focused on refining software, systems, technology, and customer service.
Right. Nice. So what is it like running a company together? I mean, you mentioned that. I mean,
it's funny. It's not for a lot of people, but it really works for us. Like, we always talk about it, like we've kind of molded into the same person at this point. Like we'll literally be thinking more of it better. We'll be thinking the same things. We'll like finish each other's sentences all the time. We're, you know, getting the kids ready for school. So it's not just work. It's also daily life and working out and, you know, the kids and after school practices and recruiting. I mean, we do everything together. And yeah, there's times where, you know, we can bump heads with things. But I think at this point we've come to the realization that we're good at certain things. And well, so we try and stick to those roles
too. Yeah. I think initially we butted heads a lot because we're both salespeople, we're both competitive. And then we kind of started, you know,
competing
against each other. Like I'm doing more than you and I'm closing this or I'm bringing that. And then we kind of realized, and she's like, I want you to be more focused on what she was. And I was like, no, I think that's the issue, is I think we need to separate our divisions. Your ops, she's very detailed, organized. She's amazing with, you know, how structuring works and how the flow should work. And that's, you know, she kind of, you know,
run
built
the
whole back
of
end of the company.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm good with relationships, bringing in the business, recruiting, marketing, social media. So I stay the front of the house, she stay the back of the house, and we kind of stay in our own wings. When people hit us up, we know it's my division or her division, and we kind of handle it that way. That's kind of when we found our flow, like, okay, this is what success should be like. And so we stay out of each other's, you know, direct arena.
Yeah, and we're too loud to sit next to each other too. Like our offices are, they're next to each other, but absolutely different rooms. Like,
yeah, I mean, the mortgage business, you get a lot of like loud conversations.
Yeah.
You got to walk around pace and stuff like that. No. So Groves, tell us about more about Groves. Groves is like a one-stop shop. You guys do real estate, you do commercial, residential. Do you guys do car loans?
We do. Yeah.
We do.
So big ones on Bentleys.
Yeah, yeah. Exotic cars. Yeah.
So, I mean, residential, we start off in the residential space. We're a broker, non-delegated correspondent lender. We work with close to 168 different lenders in the residential and NDC space, about 40 lenders that were approved within the NDC. We're funding with our own lines. You know, anything, the hard money, non-QM, you know, the tough deals, first time construction, all that good stuff. So the niches have always been our thing because, you know, our loan officers need solutions, especially in the marketplace that we've been in the last 2 years. If you don't have creative products, you're not making money.
Right.
So for me, sales is, you're good at sales as how many good products you have to sell. So for me, I'm like, to my company, I'm like, you have everything.
Yeah.
You want to sell car loans? Yes, you can do it. You want to do a yacht? You can do it. You want to do a HELOC? You want to do a second? You want to do an SBA loan? So for me, like my friends call me the money guy at this point, except for personal loans. They still call me every week for those. I don't do those, but I will find a solution. Now I'm even doing, you know, big business loans as well for startups like pref and like debt and equity now. So I've kind of like evolved because people keep asking me. I'm like, well, I guess I'll get into that. So that's the way I look at business. If there's an opportunity to make money, I'm going to capitalize on it and I'm going to do it. That's what we've done. Groves.
Yeah. And that's also what I feel like you have to do, especially to stay relevant in our industry, because it's never the same market. I mean, if we've been in it for, you know, a few decades, we've seen these waves up and down. And each time there's a different product that you have to sell. Each time there's a different client on the other end. So being able to pivot and adapt into that has been a huge strength for us. And yeah, we're always, you know, reevaluating and adapting and bringing on new products and solutions and training. And you know, we really do have that entrepreneurial spirit, and we want everyone that's on our team to also be the same. So we keep that kind of mindset with the company.
That's cool. Mm-hmm. So with the rates being so high, you know, over the last year or so, what kind of deals were you focused on during that time?
Purchase
has always been a big focus for our company.
Purchases are limited too. So, I mean,
yeah.
Was your overall business just down because of that? Or were you guys just working extra hard to pull in more?
Well, purchase has always been our focus, you know, from day one. So getting in front of realtors, and I always tell loan officers, if you're not building relationships, you know, when times like become like this, you're out of the business. So relationship building is number one. So we've always focused on our review system. The client's experience is big to us. And we have a lot of social media and articles written about that. So that's always number one priority. HELOCs obviously have been a hot product for us, and giving people access to very quick HELOC products where they make money. A lot of companies don't pay their loan officers to do HELOCs. We do, and they actually paid very well for them because people don't want to touch those low first. We get it. And then in the construction arena, that's obviously worried behind in construction now because of COVID still at this point. So construction is a big play for either first time investors or seasoned investors to start building properties, whether that's multifamily or single family houses at this point, because it's a big, big venue. So we've added a lot of lenders that focus in that space, like fund loans as well.
Yeah, I mean, real estate has been strong, right? I mean, we have had a great last few years, great decade, pretty much, of real estate. Like doing, there's always those kind of activities happening. There's always like building, you know, people adding, people doing extra, you know, add values or rehabs, remodels, fix and flips. Is that kind of the space that you're talking about? Like,
yeah, a lot of fix and flips right now. A lot of people adding value, especially in San Diego, the ADU market. Obviously, they've opened up the parameters for getting permits and the fees on that. So that's been a big focus for a lot of our LOs as well. You know, and there's, like I said, it's definitely been slower. Let's not lie to each other. It's been a slower market than we've been used to. And that's why we pivoted a lot more into the business, like SBA loans, equipment loans, also into the commercial sector, because that's actually really, really doing well right now as well.
Yeah.
So every market is going to yield you, you know, opportunities. You got to pivot to what's there. And that's what we've done really well at Groves, is say, hey, this division, this opportunity is not there right now. They'll come back around the summer when rates drop. But here's what we have. Here's what you can, you know, focus on to make money for your family and help your clients out.
That's cool. How about non-QM?
Yeah, a lot of non-QM. Like I was talking earlier with you, it's like honestly probably like 60 to 65% of our current originations a month.
So, are you seeing the more of like entrepreneurs that you're doing loans for, like business owners, or
yeah, it's mostly just mostly all seasoned investors for the most part,
like DSCR stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, DSCR has definitely been the hottest product out there the last 2 years.
DSCR purchases.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, especially with like Airbnb stuff. A lot of those investors, you know, utilizing those kind of loans. Obviously, they're easier to qualify for those individuals, and they make sense.
I'm seeing less Airbnb though transactions. If I compare it to fix and flip transactions, I'm seeing
because the permits are less. Yeah, the market's changed. Like, we used to have properties in Miami that they switched all the regulations behind it. Like, even California, like, they slimmed up how many permits. So Airbnb was really big during COVID, and then they pulled back based on the cities in, you know, states pulling, you know, with the hotel issues and things like that. So everyone wants to make their money. So that was big. But yeah, recently, she's correct. I mean, it's going to be a lot of fix and flip products are going to be the hot one, but investors have been the biggest play. Mm-hmm. So I talk to clients every day, because they're like, well, I'm waiting for those rates to drop. And I'm like, listen, I'm an investor. All my friends are investors. They're all buying right now. You know why? Yeah. Because this is the bottom. We went through a 2-year correction. We've been in it. So you buy now, next 10 years, you're going to profit. But these first time home buyers, these people buying their primaries, still think that, oh my God, the rates are going to drop and we get a way better deal.
Yeah.
The deal is on the purchase price, not on the interest rate. We can switch that, right?
Yeah, date the rate.
Date the rate, mirror the purchase price. Yep. And that's what I keep telling people. So, like, I have this, you know, conversation, like, repetitively with people, because they're like, they just don't understand this premise. I'm like, volume is still down, right?
Yeah.
But there's still a big need for people to buy properties right now. We're way backdated as far as what's out there and available to these individuals. And when rates drop, it's going to be like 26 months in. I mean, right now I'm seeing like under 1.5, like 17 offers on properties, and the rates haven't dropped yet. So it's still been going up. So if you're sitting on the fence going, well, I'm going to wait, don't. Just stop.
Don't buy something now. We'll refinance.
You're going to sit there forever, because it's not going to be 2008 where these prices are going to come down. You're going to be kicking yourself.
It's like I said, it's 26 months in. Like, get in there before it goes crazy, and you'll be happy you did.
I think the biggest problem is that people are sitting on the sidelines thinking, you know, maybe they're young, they have in their recent memory 2008, which wasn't that long ago, and they're thinking, okay, there's going to be another 2008
crash,
but they don't realize that was 75 years in the making.
Yeah,
we didn't have a crash like that for 75 years. But, you know, people that are sitting there now are thinking that just happened not too long ago, it's going to happen again, but it could be another 50, 70 years before something like that happens.
But it's not even the same market. That was honestly because of bad loans that were being written.
Exactly.
I mean, you could have a heartbeat, maybe not even a heartbeat. It didn't even matter. It didn't even matter. And you'd get a loan and it would be adjustable. It would be a negative amortization. I mean, so it was loans that should not be given out at all. And that's what honestly landed us in that position at that time. And now everything is so regulated. I mean, you have to verify every single document. So it's not from a loan perspective that things like that can happen.
Yeah, there's no subprime loans.
No.
Yeah. I mean, have you guys seen any?
No.
I don't. I mean, we don't call for, you know, 580 FICOs. We don't do them. But I haven't seen a 580 FICO in I don't know how long.
There are some lenders that still do them.
Yeah, we've got lenders that go into 500.
But do you ever come across those lower FICOs?
Very rarely.
Oh,
yeah, very rarely.
Right now, I think just in general, people's credit has gotten better, right? I mean, I don't know, but that's just my thought. Is that,
well, if people did a loan, let's say during COVID time, maybe they took out cash and paid off liabilities, right? If they were smart and did that, I think maybe a lot of people did that, and that could have boosted credit at that point.
And like all the like things like Credit Karma and all the FICO.com now, everyone's really hyper aware of their FICO score, right? And it's so important. So I'm wondering if that has had an effect on people's FICO, or, you know, the overall FICOs of America. I don't know.
Well, I mean, if you look at the recent data that's coming out, I mean, the debt, the credit card debt's over like $1 trillion at this point. So a lot of like people through COVID, or they got those PPP loans and you know, bought luxury goods and, you know, invested the correct way. So, I mean, I think it obviously depends what market you're working on. I think historically speaking, I think credit, you know, like I said, if you're smart, you're educated, yes, you're correct. But let's be honest, not a lot of people are that focused on that, and they don't understand the financials, they don't understand the market. And that's why they still think a crash is going to come, because they have this misinformation like, well, it happened in 08, it's going to happen again. I'm like, why would it crash? Like, give me the definitive.
Give me the reasons. Yeah. I'm trying to figure it out. I'm trying to find out why. And I can't figure it out, because to her point, the loans are all good now.
Yeah.
You can't just fog a mirror and get a loan. I mean, the DSCR loans are still kind of stated income,
the
ratio. You got to put 20% down.
Yeah. You still have skin in the game there.
You have skin in the game.
Well, but the DSCR, you know, usually make sense, right? It's a business model. You're going to be getting cash flow in it, so it offsets it. So for me, it's more, you know, logical lending, really, when we look at DSCR loans and, you know, as far as the way they're set up.
Right? Yeah.
So definitely a big opportunity right now.
And I was having a conversation with my 18-year-old son, I think last week. I was telling him, I said, back in 2005, at 18, you could have gone and bought a house, zero money down, and, you know, with limited credit, mm-hmm. and still bought a house and rented it out. And he was mm-hmm. like, really?
And your loan officer would have made 10 points, yes. and it was okay.
A lot of points, and you would have been in a prepayment penalty, and yeah. you would have been screwed at the end, but... You could have done it.
You could have done it.
Now you got to save money, son. So mm-hmm. get back to work. Talk to us about social media. I know you guys are really big on social media. And I personally haven't cracked the code yet. I mean, I'm working on it. But, you know, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, all those things. What are your guys' key to that, secret to that?
Well, Daddy is much more the Instagram star. Instagram
star. You know, when we got into the mortgage space, I wanted to make it sexy. Be honest, that was kind of my idea. It's always been boring.
Sexy mortgages.
I know. Sexy business, right? Because when I think of mortgages in the past, it was just, you know, a guy wearing the gray suit, bald head, no personality, no energy. There was nothing behind it. So when we developed Groves, I told her from day one, I'm like, I want to be new age. I want to bring energy to this. I want to make it fun.
Yeah.
And that's what we've done with Groves Capital. But marketing, I think people get a little too specific, right? Like they just market nothing but mortgages all day long. At the end of the day, that doesn't actually really gain you followers, and it bores people, right? Yeah. So, you know, we were just actually at a conference there talking about what really stands out a lot in social media, and it's actually what we've already been doing. Is it's not just, yes, we put out information about loans and articles and that stuff helps out, but you have to bring people to your door, and they want to feel like they can relate to you. You're a real person. You've got kids. You got family. So for me, that's my social media. I'm the brand, and that's what people don't understand. Yes, Groves is the brand, but I'm a brand myself. So mm-hmm. everything I put out information wise to the public, I think about that before I put it out there. So I don't mm-hmm. bring up religion, I don't put ethnicity, I don't bring up politics. I stay out of those arena. I focus on positivity, energy, motivating, being an entrepreneur, my kids, my family, and loans, right? So when people, hit me up all the time for deals, I mean, I probably get 3 to 10 deals a week on my social media from people just watching my stuff and just hitting me up organically.
That's huge.
And then obviously when people look us up, they're going to see those kind of things. But the most I think we hear a lot is just they love the motivational side of it. It's like, hey, you guys, yes, you guys do loans, but like we really believe in being positive and helping other people live their best selves and be like, we love helping others like build their wealth in real estate. Like it's the fastest way to become a multimillionaire. So it's something we do personally, and we practice what we preach in every place in our market and our family and in our industry. And so I think social media, you need to capitalize. You are a person. It's not just about your business. Get people to come in. Mm-hmm. There's got to be some hooks. Mine's health, fitness, and motivation.
That's cool. So is it a grind to get followers? I mean, I feel like it's a grind. I'm getting new followers like every week, and it's like it's slow.
Yeah.
But like to get, it just feels sometimes like it's a grind.
Yeah.
Because, well, you have another job, right? You got a job. You got to be the CEO of your company. Same here. I got to do podcasts. But we do a lot of podcast clips, mm-hmm. which help, and then we can promote those with TikTok or whatever. They'll let you, pay $10 to get, some views and people to engage with you on it, which is, I guess it's nice, versus like having to just wait for someone to see your post. But like what's the way? I know you have a lot of followers. So was there a secret to that?
Well, like I said, it's the what you post. And like I said, don't be so business focused every time.
People share.
Yeah. And it's the little things that people reach out to me like, hey, Chris, what are you doing on a cheat night? And they'll start talking to me about that. And then they'll ask me about a loan product because of it. Like,
health cheat night.
They'll ask me, everyone always hits me up. I'm a big health nut. I used to be a personal trainer for many years before I got in this business. So it's still a passion of mine, the no hormones. So a lot of people hit me up on those questions, and then organically loans will happen, or they're like, oh, I didn't know you do commercial. I didn't know you do this. And I'm going to connect you with this person. So you need to have conversations with people and not, like I said, focus on what you love to do, whether it's cooking, whether it's sports. Those are the kind of things you want to put out there in conjunction with your business. And that's how you're going to get better followers and people that actually are going to be interested in talking to you. Because at the end of the day, for me, it's relationship based. That's business for me. Is not just one transaction, see you later. And I meet loan officers that tell me that, like, I've been in the business 20 years. I don't have a book though. I'm all, what are you doing with your life? Like, that, I mean, it just perplexes me when I meet those people. And I'm like, well, you're not coming here. That's, if you haven't figured that out, this is a relationship game. At this point, you're always going to be that low man on the totem pole, and you're always going to be out when the market's low. So relationships are the key. So take care of people, follow up with them. put good information out, not just your business, personal, motivational, like get people to see you as a person. I think that's what a lot of people don't understand.
Yeah, that's true. Talk to us about fitness real quick. So I'm a big believer that how you feel inside, it translates to how you are outside, whether or not that means you're going out, you know, hustling and trying to grind it, you know, have the energy to go out and hunt for loans and hunt for new borrowers, hunt for new buyers, you know, just to have the energy to just hustle and be active, right? Like it kind of starts probably with your morning routine. It starts with your daily routine, starts with your way you eat, the way you ate the night before, or the way you drank the night before. Mm-hmm. Talk to us about that.
It's huge in our life. Yeah.
Well, my brother, I had an older brother growing up, and he was my financial older brother. My parents were never good about finances and still probably will never retire because of it. My brother was a smarter one, but he told me at a young age, he's like, Christopher, if you can have a good mind, you're going to be tall. If you can keep your body in shape, no one will stop you. And I always kept it in the back of my head. And then I look at people like I idolize, like Arnold Schwarzenegger and what he's done with his life from fitness, right? But at the end of the day, business and fitness are very much the same, like you were saying. It's consistency, it's persistency, it's putting a plan together, following the plan. You may not see immediately results right away, whether it's marketing, whether it's your business strategy, but keep pushing forward regardless of, hey, I'm not seeing it, and then it'll hit, right? Like I had clients for years that would, you know, the last 3 months I've been dieting, Chris, I'm doing everything you're saying, and it's not happening at all. Just keep following the plan. Then all of a sudden they have a huge drop. And they're like, oh my God. I'm like, but a lot of people give up before it, right? They're like, it didn't. I did a couple social media posts and get a ton of clients. It's failure. I did a couple leads. It's a horrible source.
I ate one good meal and I haven't lost 10 pounds.
Yeah. So yeah, fitness and business is one of the same for me. And yes, like you said earlier, if you feel good about yourself and you're, that's going to come across to your clients. You have more energy, yes, but you also have confidence, right? When I talk to people, I'm confident in who I am, what I can offer, and how I'm going to take care of people. And that comes across, right? Especially when you're talking to people in this business with trust and reliability. If you don't have confidence behind what you're speaking, it's hard to get business.
Right.
And I always say, if you see someone that is in shape, what's your first inclination when you see that person? You're like, okay, this person.
Lucky.
Some people,
good genetics. Yeah.
And one of my loan officers the other day, he's like, you're taking that Captain American serum. I'm like, no, I actually work out, you know, 7 days a week and I diet and I fast 22 hours a day and I'm very regimented, but that's your excuse for making yourself feel better because I'm that way, right? So a lot of people see
whoever told you you could only work out, you only had to work out 3 days a week. That's probably what screwed me up the most.
Yeah.
Now I work out pretty much almost every day of the week, but like that's what it took to make changes for me. You know, I was like, oh yeah, I'll do my 3 days. And sometimes you'd miss and it'd be like, so you do 2 days a week.
Yeah.
And you go for 45 minutes or whatever, half hour, an hour.
Yeah.
You know, you'd be on the treadmill for 20 minutes and then you're like doing some curls. You know, it's like, that doesn't do it.
Yeah. No. It doesn't. You gotta
have consistency, like you just said. I mean, it's, keep going, man. I love this.
Yeah, you got to work on it every day. And the biggest thing I was saying earlier, when you meet someone, first off, we all judge each other within first few seconds.
Split second, before
I even talked to you, you looked at me and you judged
me. Especially girls. Girls judge.
They judge.
Even faster.
And then you talk and then you get judged again, right? Yeah. And it's human nature, whether you want to admit it or not. We all judge each other, you know. But I think putting yourself together in a clean package, healthy in shape, dress well, you know, everywhere I go, I want to be ready to meet someone.
Yeah.
And people don't understand. Like, I get clients at a grocery store. I get clients walking around in a car, you know, at the mall.
At a gas station.
At a gas station. Like, oh my gosh. People talk to me about my car, and I end up getting she'll laugh at me because she's like, when did you just get the deal?
Well, we're big into manifestation, and we have this supercar that we're looking to, well, we're going to get a different one, and we want to get rid of this one, basically. And we were just talking about it. We're like, oh, we need to get rid of this car before the new one comes in. And we go to a gas station, and we're in my car, and this guy that's pumping gas, he goes, oh, nice car. I like your car. And then all of a sudden used to work for Ferrari.
You
happened to buy a car from him and he's like, oh, I have a friend of mine looking for a McLaren. And that's the car that we're selling. We're like, oh, look at how that just popped up. But so cool. But it kind of goes back to that last question that you had where I feel like just everything starts from like up here, right? If you feel good in your mind and you can translate that to your body, to your business, to your family and friends. I think that is the most important is, you know, start with your mind, start with the thoughts that go on inside your head. And if you can, you know, self-analyze and catch yourself in those bad moments, that'll help tremendously with everything down the road.
So true.
Yeah.
I don't think I've met someone that's successful that didn't believe in manifestation. station.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I keep telling her like that you should keep, you know, and people realize that the highest level people are all about it, and it's almost like. And you're trying to, I try to explain to my kid too, like how do you explain manifestation to a child, right?
Right.
And I guess they always say the red car is the best way to say it. When you start looking for red car, you're going to start seeing red cars everywhere, right? Because you're putting into your preview that I want to see this, you're seeking it out, and so you start seeing it.
Yeah.
And that's the best way to describe manifestation. Like for us, we make a goal, and before I've even started, I've already telling everyone that I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, a couple months ago, I said, I'm going to start a debt fund. And everyone's like, what do you do? I'm going to start a debt fund. I'm going to start bridge loans. I started every meeting I took, I told people what I'm doing. Then I started putting together. Now Fidelity's, you know, partnering with us. And that's happened in 3 months. And from zero inception, I have all these investors ready to rock and roll. We're going to go to Dubai and push it out there. But it's happened for a lot of things in life for us. For me, I always tell people, if you want to be successful, you need to share it to the world.
Yeah.
Right. This is who I am. This is what I want to do. And tell everyone around you and be focused on that. And then they'll start talking and introduce you to the right people and the energy. We got to put action behind it as well.
Yep.
And you're going to get there. So, yeah, we're big believers in that. And mindset, like Elena said, is everything. At the end of the day, yes, you can be the healthiest person ever with your body. But if this isn't healthy,
it's toxic to everything else.
Well, yeah. And for us, we've been very good. And it's took a lot of training to take the bullshit and turn it positive.
Yeah.
Like every day my phone rings 90% of the time, our phone rings.
It's fires.
It's a fire. It's an issue. It's a problem. These loan officers giving these long stories and all the drama. I'm all stop. Like what's here, the bullet points here, what's really going on. Mm-hmm. Okay. Fix this, do this, move on. They're like, that's it. I'm all, yeah. Because you're focused on all this BS that doesn't matter. The deal, like get the drama, get these issues out of it. What's the problem? What's the root cause?
Mm-hmm.
But people
they
like,
need to close today.
Yeah. Yeah. But people like to
how
dwell.
Do we accomplish it?
Yeah. People like to dwell on this stuff that really doesn't matter because it makes them feel like they're doing something.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, we're so busy. I don't have time to dwell on it. I don't have time to like think about an issue. I just want to focus on the solution. So I heard the issue. Let's focus on the solution and move on.
Yeah.
And these people like want to keep going back. And I'm like, this is your problem. Because you just want to complain.
You're stuck in a cycle.
Complain. Yeah. It's like, hear the problem, find the solution, move on, and move forward, and stop talking about it. Like she knows, once the problem's done, we've already fought about it, we agreed it, we changed it. I want to hear about it again. I got to move on.
Yeah, man, I don't have time for that shit.
Yeah.
Seriously, nobody got time for that.
So, manifestation doesn't just come naturally. Was it like a Tony Robbins seminar? Like, how did that start becoming part of your life?
No, you know, like I do motivational speaking now. Actually, we met Tony Robbins first time 2 years ago at UWM. We were one of the top performers in the country. We met him backstage and great guy. It was actually the first time I've ever seen a motivational speaker. And I started speaking before I even saw my first motivational speaker. And people are always like, well, you don't listen. You don't read the books and read
it's
books
just,
like
it was
this.
It was natural for him. Like he
so you,
was.
You
he
had
wasn't...
some programming in your childhood then. Like
no,
did you,
I
was your dad or
no,
mom?
No, we,
or?
We programmed ourselves.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, my parents are not that
we
way.
We changed our software. Yeah.
So you just, you like paradigm shifted out of your whatever programming was.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing I saw, my parents, I mean, both, you know, my background is my parents are very humble beginnings, like blue-collar workers. They're not financially set up. They don't understand finances at all. They probably don't have any savings for, you know, for retirement, right? And that scared me. So I've heard them complain about money my whole life. So what did I learn? I said, I'm going to stop complaining about money. If you complain you don't have money, you complain about your issues and faults all the time, what are you going to get?
Yeah.
More problems,
that.
No money.
Right.
Right. So I ask Elena, I never say I don't have money. I'm like, nothing's not achievable for me in my mindset. And it's always been that way. Like I meet people like all the time at higher level billionaires. And I'm never going like, oh, it must be nice to be you. Like, that's not my mindset. Like I'm going to get there too if I wanted to. I'm happy for other people's success.
Yeah.
But that's how people have to be every day is they got to be open to it. Hey, you can accomplish anything you want to. I'm literally a believer in that. 110%.
Were you told that as a kid?
No.
Your parents never said you could do anything?
No. Okay. My parents were not those people. Probably that's, I became very independent because of it. So I started working at the age of 12. My parents really stopped financially contributing to me by the time I, you know, had a job.
I think at 12, when you see that you can make money, it's such an eye opener, you know, and because then I think also probably you were in a place where you had a lack or you had a want for something more.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was how I was too. My parents were, you know, they were lower income, you know, they weren't probably not even really middle class, but like a little bit below. And they, you know, like once a year I got like maybe a skateboard deck for Christmas, but I wanted to have more. Right. And so I was like, what do I got to do? And then I, you know, you start thinking and you're like dreaming. I think that's where it starts, right? The dreaming of, I want this thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that, and then like, how do I get that thing? And then you have to figure that out. And that, and I was like 12, probably the same age, you know, where it was like, I got to go start working or I got to go figure this out. And
And I think the biggest thing, and I'm a big preacher of this, is you start realizing the people you hang out with the most are the biggest contributors to your success. Right?
Or not.
Or not.
Or to, not yeah, to,
and,
yeah.
And we've had a lot of growing pains, you know, as
detriment.
Yeah. And that's the biggest thing is like we have friends and we're like, well, I'm loyal to this person because I've known them for 16 years, but they're negative. There's drama. There's always an issue. They're always like, oh, it must be nice to be you. And I was like, why am I spending my energy and time? Well, you know, and Lane and I both experienced this. So for me, I want to be around people that make me level up, make me want to be better. Like, you know, I want people around me that are doing bigger, better things. I'm not never jealous of my friends. Like, I would love that. I want them to succeed and I want them to feel the same for me. And when you're around someone that's a high performer, increases your performance by 15-20% just being around a high performer, right? So if I can tell any young entrepreneurs is get rid of the people that say you can't do something, tell you're crazy for doing something, and make sure you focus on people that support you and your goals and you do the same for them. If those people are like not in your friend group, find a new friend group.
Yep. That's like the difference between a scarcity mindset and abundance mindset, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like if someone's thinking like, if people aren't happy for you with your success, then they're in a scarcity mindset.
Absolutely. Because they
think that your success is taking from them.
Absolutely.
Well, right? I think it's human nature to be jealous. Right?
It is. It is totally. And
people look at people and when someone has more than you, a lot of people go look at them like they try to find excuses like for the reason they have more.
Invalidate.
Oh, they had a rich family or they got lucky or this or that because it makes them feel better that they're not as successful and it's toxic.
Right.
Really, you're just putting like so. And I've had the same time. And we think all of us as humans, we look at someone that's rich and famous, like Post Malone with tattoos all over his face. And like, look at this guy. Right. It's like, just be freaking happy for him. He's crushing it. He's an amazing musician.
He's a super talented person.
Of course. I don't care.
I love that new song, Hollywood's Bleeding. Yeah. I played it all the time. It's so good.
But it's easy for people to judge, right? And at the end of the day, like, just be happy for other people's success. And you almost feel better saying it. Like, oh my God, he's crushing it. It's amazing. Yeah. Good for him. Like Kardashians, like, oh, how they made their money. Who the heck cares? They're freaking successful. They capitalized on what they could, and they have a huge empire. So good for them.
Yeah.
Love it. And I feel better saying that, really. And I had to revamp my brain about it because I used to be like that with people. Like, you kind of downplay it, and you're like, why am I downplaying it? That make me feel better?
Yeah.
Not really.
I still don't like her tequila, though.
Yeah. Better stuff. Better stuff.
There's this one tequila I heard about. It's called Amor Indio.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it is.
Great tequila.
Fire. Fire.
I mean, once you try it, you'll never want to try anything, or you want to drink anything else.
That's
so good.
Love it.
Yeah, we drink tequila spot.
I like it.
All right, talk about, you know, this is a new year. We're already in month three.
First
but
quarter.
Everyone seems to be more optimistic about 24. Mm-hmm. Talk to us about what you guys are doing. You guys probably have goals set, but like, what are you doing to really maximize and capitalize on this year?
You know, I think this year it's been a huge push and focus for us, especially with our recruiting that we're doing. So we still want to see anyone who comes and joins our team. So, you know, one of the things that we're really focusing on is the commercial division as well. So, you know, and this is something that, you know, both Chris and I are very passionate about. And we're noticing that, especially with the collapse of the larger banks last year, like First Republic and Silicon Valley, and, you know, just a lot of banks out there aren't doing commercial anymore. They just don't want it. They don't want to get rid of their liquidity and they just don't want to be involved in that at the moment. So a lot of that volume is now moving into the broker space.
Yeah.
And commercial is super slow. Like anyone who's working in commercial, it takes forever for them to get back to you. And that's something that we're completely opposite. We're very fast paced. We're always looking for solutions. We're very relationship based. So now we're starting to, you know, really bring in a lot more commercial transactions into the company. A lot of originators that are focused on to commercial, although we've been focused on it for the last 2 years, us personally, but we've seen just a huge growth in that space in the last few months, for sure.
Yeah, it's been a crazy market with commercial. Like Elena said, the liquidity in these banks, everyone's holding it tight at this point. They want to let go. So now family funds offices are the play, or private financing. So that's what we've aligned ourselves with, is going direct. Because you'll start, when you get in commercial, you'll notice a lot of brokering to brokering or side brokering. You got this daisy chain of BS.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't even work with those kind of situations. Like, you direct to the sponsor, I work with you, that's it. But yeah, you see a lot of daisy chains and people just trying to make money for, hey, I introduced you to Ted, so you pay him a check. I'm like, what'd Ted do? I'm like, paying him for nothing. Like, he's part of this transaction. So that's why commercial is a different space, and you got to watch your back a little bit more than residential, because it's still the wild, wild west.
Cut you out.
Mm-hmm. People try to cut you out or try to steal your sources. That's what we've noticed as well. Mm-hmm. So we've learned some trial and error in that, and how to protect sources and keep things dialed in. But it's a lot of NDAs, non-circumvents that we have now that we organize to make sure everyone's protected. But at the end of the day, I'm going to make sure our borrowers are protected first and foremost, and we're going to sources that are not going to take advantage of them. because, you know, some of these companies can charge big premiums. Hey, give me 150 grand and we'll start, you know, finding you pref equity source, and they don't perform, they lose that money, or give me $10,000 to start the escrow. So there's a lot of these like weird things that people don't understand that really you don't have to do.
Yeah.
So we stay away from those kind of weird nuances and make sure our clients are getting a good experience, the bars are taken care of, and they're out of any legal issues from it.
Nice. So besides doing kind of what you do on a normal basis, which is like we were talking about, you know, pumping the gas at a car, get in your car, you meet people. What are some ways that other mortgage brokers could crush it in 24? Like just different ideas that you guys are thinking of.
So I have a few ideas. Okay, so one idea, there's a website called CoStar, right? We all know this CoStar.
No, I've never heard of
no?
it.
No? No, for real.
CoStar, I have to look that up.
So there's just a lot of different ways that you can either reach out to title companies, financial advisors, and other websites like this, the one I'm talking about, CoStar, where you actually see loan data, data. Which way do you like it?
Potato.
You can actually see that information. You can see when loans are coming due. So there's a lot of, you know, creative ways that you can reach out to potential borrowers. Obviously, you know, making relationships with realtors is huge.
Mm-hmm. Purchase businesses
networking. Yeah, there's so many networking groups. I mean, well, there's so much opportunity.
I think a lot of people sit at home in their desk and then wonder why the deals aren't coming to them.
Why is the phone not ringing?
I sit there all day long on my computer tapping. Nothing's happening. People need to go out more. You know, COVID's over. Get out there. Go network. Go to open houses. You know, shake hands with realtors. Like, be social. I think one of the biggest things people don't understand is like your hobbies are the best way to bring in business. Like if you want to be on a dodgeball team or, you know, soccer, whatever it is. Like
Pickleball.
You know, that's a big thing right now.
The gym.
Church, whatever it is. Like, go to something you like organically. You're going to meet people and you're going to grow that sphere. And that's one of the easiest ways. So I always tell people, be unique. Like, do what you love and you'll get business because of it around those people. So it doesn't always have to be just, hey, I have to go to open houses all day long. Like, go play pickleball. I'm sure those people start sending their deals once they know what you're doing and they have a good relationship with you.
Right.
Because everything's about trust, reliability, and follow through, right? And what's better than that, have a sports team to do that with.
It's so true. I mean, this is our business, right? It's to go out and find a loan. Find at least one loan and get that loan done. Every month, there's loan officers out there that are zeroing, right? They're like, we used to call it bageling, right? Like zero loans. That's your job, like to go out and find a deal. I mean, find multiple deals, but you got to start with one. And if you're not good at that, maybe you got to get into a different business, right? Mm-hmm. Or learn how to get good at that.
Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of the issues, I mean, 70% of the loan officers left the business the last 2 years, 70%.
A lot.
Right? So you have two ways to look at this. Number one, the people that left are because they were so negative about the market themselves. You know how many times I meet a mortgage originator and they're just so, oh, the market's hard. There's nothing to do. There's no opportunities. I'm all, because that's all you're saying. All I heard was negative.
Yeah.
Like, that's not, I never say that any day. There's so, every day I wake up, there's so many opportunities.
It's always an opportunity.
There's no glass ceiling what I can produce because I have that mindset that there's always going to be something come my way if I go out and get it. Right. So a lot of the people left were just the people that are doing refis, the people that save money. It's not hard being a loan officer that can do refinances. Let's be honest. It's not hard to save people money.
No.
Being purchased forward is more difficult. You know, transactions with realtors and clients and emotions, like that's more difficult. So I think a lot of it's from the mindset of the loan officers. Like, if you feel like this is a crappy market and the rates are super high, and at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. The rates are what the rates are. We need to help people buy homes, refinance, leverage their money, and we're problem solvers. So at the end of the day, you're helping people get loans, but we see ourselves as financial problem solvers. Like, how do we help people gain more wealth, have financial freedom, how to free up debt? That's the way I look at things. Not just, oh, the rates are high. Sorry, wait for it to come down. Like, it's a horrible market. What are we going to do? But that's what I hear a lot. And that's why they're not successful, because that's the mindset.
Going right back to mindset. It's where you got to start every morning. I mean, is there a routine you guys do? I mean, you got to, you know, work out. Do you drink coffee? You do smoothies? Like, what is your...
No, it's a fasting until two. Until two for me, and he goes a little later.
Mm-hmm. I fast for like 20, 22 hours a day.
Do you OMAD? Is that... like one meal a day, or
it's the Chris math. It's I just eat from, she always laughs at me. It's like a buffet.
It's
from
nonstop.
6 to 10 o'clock or 8 to 10 o'clock. I just eat a bunch of meals there. Biggest thing, we wake up, typically work out first thing in the morning every day. I get up before the kids get up. I want to work out. We take them to school together typically, and then we get back to the office. And typically I'm so busy throughout my day, I don't really miss my meals anyways. And being more keto and having nothing for my body to eat off, it's going to work on fat. And I feel like I'm a higher performer because of it.
Yep.
So there's a lot of misconceptions. Who would have thought,
you know, fat is a good source of food and that our body naturally puts it aside.
Exactly. Right? I know. And, so nicely. And it goes and it repairs any damage that you have in your cells as well. That's another, I mean, key benefit to fasting, which, you know, I don't think a lot of people know as much.
The biggest thing with the American diet, too, and I'll touch on this a little because a lot of people don't understand this, is when you eat carbohydrates in the morning, you're shutting down your fat burning right away. So as soon as you eat that fruit, eat the banana, it's not healthy. I'm just going to say fruit's not healthy in the morning. I'm going to say it. Protein, fat, fine. Otherwise, fast. Because your body's going to be more ample to burn off ketones, body fat for energy, and you're going to feel better. So that's a big thing. Don't eat carbs in the morning, all right, everyone. And then one big thing we've been doing, and we've felt it's a game changer. Sounds kind of silly when I say it now. Like, now I'm into it. But frequencies. So we're big into frequencies. We listen to frequencies when we
sounds.
Music frequencies.
Our kids. Yep.
So when we sleep, we listen to 432 hertz, which is Earth's frequency, is where you're supposed to be the most like de-stress, optimization of energy, just feel good. Mm-hmm. So we sleep to that. Then we have different.
Do you have big speakers that make the vibrations?
We have what are the speaker systems? Sonos. We have Sonos in our room. We just play it in our bedroom, and then
have it throughout the house. So like sometimes, on a weekend, on a chill weekend, we'll just put it on, and it'll just be playing throughout the house
and
everywhere.
Is it just like one tone?
It's music. So go on Spotify, look up, I don't think I need these two, but go on Spotify, look up 432 hertz sleep music, and you're going to see like 15, 20 different stations. Put that on, try it for the next 2 weeks, see how you wake up. You're going to wake up less stress, more energy, but there's different frequencies for everything, for healing, for manifestation, for optimization. So like we listen to 562 is another one for healing. 963 is like the third eye frequency for opening up just bringing in positive energy.
Yeah.
And it sounds weird. My brother is from Wisconsin and he came in, I'm telling him this, and he's Midwestern guy. And he's looking at me. He's like, my brother's such a California guy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm not joking. Like I preach this to my loan officers when they're like, having a hard time being positive. I'm like, do this every day. It's not hard to put on music and listen to. I'm not saying
just try it out.
You got to work out.
Just play in the background. It kind of just blends in at the end of the day.
But everything in life is frequency. So the best thing is when they play positive frequencies around water, right? What happens to the water? It actually has
beautiful patterns.
Yeah. And when you play negative frequencies, what happens?
It looks ugly.
And what is your body mostly composed of?
70% water.
So your body responds to frequencies, and everything we have around us, these mics, technologies, lights, are all humming different frequencies that put stress on your brain, right? So for us, now they're really getting into it, and you start realizing like the Mark Zuckerbergs, all these people, that they are big on frequencies as well with manifestation, because it is energy. We are all energy at the end of the day. So for us, we like to maximize as much positive energy around us at all times. Even when our kids start going crazy, we have two on the kitchen counter. Elena will put them on.
I'll turn them on and they'll chill out.
Yeah, like 3 to 5 minutes where you say, quiet, chill, and then you'll watch the energy just chill out. And a lot of my friends that have been doing, they're like, wow, this is actually working. But the weirdest thing we're finding is we're on like the same frequency with mindset with like everything. Like we'll be watching a show and we'll have the same thought.
The same comments like all the time.
Yeah. Wow. But even in business, for goals, like we're always thinking the same thing. It's like, and even,
it's like you're in tune.
We're in tune.
Humming in the same resonance.
Right? Yeah. Like I feel like we're at the best frequency of our life. Like we're married for 10 years. We're very passionate with each other still. And frequencies being in that thing is a big deal. Like we're on the same frequency. And a lot of people don't understand that, but it's a big deal.
Yeah. I think they tapped into that in the 70s, the vibes and stuff. But like it never really made it, kind of dwindled down. And now it's coming back up. I'm starting to see stuff like that. Even if like the ancient temples and stuff were made a certain way to like resonate a certain tone, and like the cathedrals with the different organ pipes that had different tones and sounds. And I mean, I believe it.
Yeah,
totally.
I'm doing research on it too. And so this is
I'll
cool.
send you some links on it. But even on meditate, put it in my sauna, we'll listen to 963 hertz
sauna.
And red light sauna. And that's my meditation time. But it's weird. I every day, I'm not joking. I listen to frequencies every day, and I feel like we didn't. Religious about it for the last year and a half, and it's been a game changer.
Do you think that music is sort of taking us away from that because it distracts you, like regular pop music?
Yeah,
is what I'm talking about versus something like that.
So music actually used to have 432 hertz in this. A lot of people didn't know.
Now it's 440.
Yeah, so they actually changed the frequency off. So like people got an EDM music the last couple of years. So like there's this one DJ Blondish, and she's all about 432 in her music.
Really,
you listen to her, everyone's partying, and her energy is great, and you just feel good when you listen to her music. And she's a big believer. So a lot of these people are putting it in like now if they understand it, like it makes you feel good, right? EDM music is supposed to make you feel good. But all these negative frequencies that we're listening to music, like you said, or, obviously you'll go with the conspiracy theorists where the government's trying to like control us in that way. And who knows, maybe it is.
To make you feel a little off. Like, yeah, I mean, a little off.
But we got cell phones in our ears all day long. Cell towers on us. We're always around electronics. You have to like almost calm your brain from that. So that's why I look at it like that. It's like we have to take yourself out of that stimulation and get back to how you should feel as a human being. And it's hard these days with everything around us.
Yeah. Well, that's cool that you're sharing this because you're right. People might be like, this is a little wacky, but hey, you know, it's like the Enlightenment age. We're learning so much, whether it's saunas, whether it's what we're putting in our body. You know, there's so much information now, and a lot of it, there could be some misinformation out there, but we're discovering new things every day that help, and why not try to do the best you can to help your best chances of success?
Yeah, I mean,
absolutely.
We're always trying to better ourselves, and that's what you should try to do in your business, in your relationships, your friends, your family, your loved ones. Like, always try to be better. So if there's something I can do, like throw on music that's going to make me better and feel better, and like, why the heck not?
I love the way music will change your mood. Like in an instant.
Yep.
If it's the right music. Well, you could turn on Metallica and you'd be in a worse mood. But
yeah.
But I like on the drive in today, I put on this band, 1975, the 1975, and they have a song that just makes me feel so happy. Yep. And I play it. And
that's an easy life hack right there.
It's such an easy life hack.
If you're ever feeling down, just put something on that puts you in a good mood.
You don't need to pop a pill. I mean, some people do, but like, you know, like a certain like mental pill or whatever.
Yeah.
If you have real depression, that's a real thing. But easy ways to get yourself out of those ruts and out of those bad moods is things like music. It's crazy. Yeah. What else are you guys passionate about?
Our family, our kids. Our kids, they're the cutest. They're honestly little minis of us. And it's funny seeing them really pick up on a lot of the just kind of quirks that we do and starting to kind of emulate us in a lot of ways, you know, not just like personally, but also just the way that they're talking to like other adults. They're also like selling their like little like coloring that like our son, for example, he'll like create like a poster and he'll draw it on it and he'll have, you know, we'll have friends at the house or employ like a painting. And like this is a few years ago.
It's Conrad.
It's an original Conrad. So this is like one example. Like, and we're like, what? He was like 7 years old. We're like, what 7 year old does this? He took the painting and he put a price on the back of it. He put $100.
And we had clients over and he comes out selling them on the painting.
He's like, here, this is an original Conrad today. It's $100 right now. And this kid's 7.
And our clients are laughing like, it's great. No. It's great. Yeah. And it's cool. And he's like, well, I'm going to leave this here. I'm going to let you think about it.
I'll be back.
It's original.
Don't make a decision yet.
Yeah. He comes back and then he's like, last chance. I'll give it to you for half the price.
Today,
but it ends in half an hour, like before they're leaving, because they know like the time when they were leaving. Yeah. Like, and I'll be back before you leave to get your decision. We're like, did he just pull out the sale? Yeah. We're like, oh, he's obviously listening. Well, they're all listening.
Yeah, they're always they're around. We bring him around our business all the time. And he's been on stage with me. He's breakdanced on my performances and things like that. When I go speaking, he'll breakdance. He'll be on stage with me. He like loves going up to people. Like, I brought him to my Fastlane event this weekend. He's messing around with all the members there, and they're having a blast with him. But he's got more confidence. Like, I didn't have that confidence until I was probably mid-20s. Mm-hmm. And he, you know, goes up to people, talks to them, and is not afraid of it, even our daughter as well. But they're seeing us, right? And we encourage that. And we talk to our kids like adults.
Yeah,
that's basically like I tell them like how life is, like how to manifest, how to put hard work and action, and what things that I wish I would have known as a child. My parents never really gave that to me, but I'm very direct with him, and he's picking it up, and we get nothing but raves about from our teachers and coaches. You know,
and we explain to them, we're not just like, you do what I say because I'm the boss, and like that's it. Like, that kind of tactic doesn't work with anyone. I mean, at the end of the day, they're still little humans.
Yeah.
So we treat them like that, and we'll, you know, explain to them, well, I need you to brush your teeth because otherwise you're going to have little bugs and it's going to hurt. And then, you know, you're...
Choose the bugs.
The bugs. And then have to go to the dentist. I'm like, and you don't want that, right? So like, we'll reason with them and we'll explain to them why they have to go to bed at this time or why they've got to do this, as opposed to just saying, you got to go, and screaming. And because a lot of people do that. I mean, you know, I had some experience like that, and it's fine. Like, it happens, but you know, you can learn from those experiences. And, and I think that
teach why, and not just
don't
do.
Just do it. Just show them
why we're doing
them
this, why we think like this, why we're working so hard.
We learn more from programming and watching. than they do from audible or from listening. They see it and they're just being programmed by their eyes and
the programming. It's huge. That's what we all are, products of our
guys are definitely more visual. Women are more audible as far as like listening, but guys are definitely more visual. Like I'm one of those people as well. And so is Conrad. You know, we just look, we can pick it up faster by seeing it. When people explain it to me, I'll just show me and I'll pick it up.
You gotta see it. What about failures? Entrepreneurs fail and succeed, but not every, I don't think one entrepreneur I know nailed it the first try.
No.
A lot of failures.
Failure. What's your favorite failure?
Favorite failure? I've had gyms where I had bad partnership where people rip me off, still have my money in the account, shut it down. I've had, numerous like stories like that.
But that's like the best way to learn, right?
That's the only way to learn. Otherwise, how do you learn?
Yeah. I mean,
embracing it and not just saying, oh, it's a failure, but it's actually
what can you learn from it?
Stepping stone to the next.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But look at every high level, like, Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos, they failed a lot of things before they got really good at one thing or something really took off. So I tell people it only takes one really good idea to change your whole life. One big deal to change everything, right? So at the end of the day, failures are going to happen and I'm going to look at what happened. Okay, let's solve the problem and move on, right? Mm-hmm. And like I was in an interview the other day and they're like, well, what are your regrets? I'm like, I don't regret anything. Yeah. I am who I am. I'm where I'm supposed to be. I know where I'm going and I don't regret anything. That like I learned from those kind of things. So that's not the way I look at life. Like I should have done this and my life would have been totally different. Like if you're dwelling on that, you're never going to move forward.
Right.
So failures are going to happen. You're going to slip up. You're going to make mistakes. Just learn from them and move on.
Yeah.
Change, transform, pivot.
Was there a story that you want to share with us that was like a pivotal one?
I think the moment we spoke about earlier is when we, and what isn't necessarily a failure. It was just more of a big life change. We were both really analyzing where we were with our positions with certain brokerages, me on the mortgage side, him on the real estate side. And we're like, man, I don't know if this job is going to work out or what we're going to move into. And we've always been very independent. And I think that move of deciding to start our own company, that really was a pivotal moment for us. In that moment when we were in Costa Rica, I remember that day, and I signed up on the California Secretary of State like business license, and he was like registered. I'm like, oh my God, we're doing it. And then that was Groves Capital, and now where we are now. Yeah.
I mean, is there ever a moment though when you were starting up that you were like, gosh, we messed up. We shouldn't have started our own company? Or was it always like just
absolutely. It was crazy in the beginning because you're wearing every single freaking hat.
I don't think it was a regret that we started. It was more like, oh my god, that's so much stress. Like we were up to 55, 60 people, me and Lena wore every hat. Like
and I had hat. We had two babies. And we had a newborn and a 4-year-old.
Yeah, and I was doing real estate, our mortgage company, had a training business.
Like, and I was running all the ops, all the taxes, all the processing, all the questions, all the audits, all the reports.
We didn't have a life. We were up
paying
3,
commissions. It was in tears at some time. And we're like, okay, we've got to keep going. We can't let this opportunity pass us. And now it's time to start delegating and trusting people to put them in that position of power to then allow us to grow more, But it's not like we just started it and everything was rainbows and easy and we knew what to do. We had to learn along the way.
Yeah.
It's
tenacious.
I mean, at the end of the day, like people just need to see that like anything is possible. Like even for commercial, how I got in commercial is kind of a funny story. So I got one of my buddies called me. He's like, hey, I got this big Bahamas deal I wanted to get you in on and they need $2.5 billion.
Like one of your first commercial deals ever.
He's like, I was like, $2.5 billion.
Why not start with a billion?
Yeah, right. And at that point, I'm like, this is not possible. I don't know, like this world, like how many even get into that? But I kept in the back of my head. I started moving, started talking to people, started organizing, and I ended up putting the money together. I got $1.8 billion together from a private fund in New York to fund the Bahamas deal. So the group flies me out there. I meet with the prime minister of the Bahamas, sit down with him, go through the whole program plan, and just had a really good energy with the fellow developers. And I get back from the trip, and 2 days later, like, hey, we love you. We want you to be part of our team. We want you to be a partner on this. And buy into this whole thing, and we want to teach you how to do what we're doing. Like, you're going to be the new head of developments. And I was like, and this, like 2 years ago, I was like, hotel developments, how many get this much money? How is that my world? Now this is like, I'm flying out to Belize for another new project. Bahamas is closing in the next 60 days. I have another huge project in Vegas. So now
it's huge.
And that's like our personal stuff.
But it was
stuff,
something
right?
like that was a mountain, right? When someone's like 2.5 B, you're like, the hell am I going to get up there? But at the end of the day, I never said no. I said, I will figure it out. And yeah. I'm going to start calling. And if there's an opportunity, I'm going to freaking make it happen. And at the end of the day, that's the mindset you have to have every day. Like if there's an opportunity for me to make money for my family, for my company, I'm going to freaking make it happen.
Well, congrats on that. That's even just getting where you are on the deal now. I mean, that's huge. So when it closes, maybe you'll get some tequila.
Lots of tequila.
A few crates for sure.
Yeah, some tequila for the house.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Any shout outs of people who have helped you along the way?
Our team, definitely, like all the team at headquarters, the support they've had, even for the last 2 years when things got tough, we called them, they're like, hey, we're with you. Like, we believe in what you're doing and we're not going anywhere. That's shown us a lot, like who's really in it. And some people took off when things got tough and it showed me who they were as a person. Mm-hmm. And when they left, I propped everyone back up right away and we kept moving forward. So for me, loyalty is a big deal. And putting action behind the words, like my kids know this, everyone that works for me knows this. Like I'm a very giving person. If you don't ask and you just perform, I will give you everything. But if you're a person that keeps coming at me, I want lower margin, this, that, and eventually it's done. You perform, go above and beyond for me, and I don't have to ask you, and I see that, I'm going to reward you. So that's my life. I've never had a paycheck, ever. Like, I've never been on a salary. Like, everything I've made or produced is based on me performing, and that's the way I see life. Like, we make money based on me closing a deal.
You're a capitalist.
That's it, right? And then people are like, I want this, I want that. I'm like, you're not a salesperson, and I was never given it to you. I will give you as much opportunity as possible, and you have it all.
But you have to work for it.
You have to work for it, and you got to put action behind it. So That's the way I value people. It's just put hard work, tenacity, energy in it. Don't ask, and you will get. But there's always people who keep taking advantage, keep asking until you burn it out.
Well, it's like, when you're really, and we're very liberal in the way that we, run the company in the sense of that everyone's a friend. Everyone is like a family member. That's how we want them to see us and how we want to treat them. So, it can be easy to kind of step over those lines sometimes. We're like, oh, maybe I'll ask for a little more. And then it's like we're already doing a lot. And we run a very unique business on our side too. And so, sometimes it can get a little disheartening because, it's like a leash. You just keep going and going and going. Mm-hmm. You're like, no more. Otherwise, well, I feel like I'm being taken advantage of.
You take them to the candy shop. You keep saying yes, yes, yes. They're just going to expect it.
They're going to keep asking.
Eventually, I say no. Like, you have a lot. Like, be happy and then just keep pushing on it and show me and I'll give you better based on your performance, right? And that's what people have to understand is you have to earn it. Like, we're not sitting here because we didn't work our butts off. Like, every day, like, we haven't stopped for, like, last 14 years of meeting each other. Like, barely ever take a break ever. It's constantly recruiting, building, growing, finding the next client. And we've been relentless about that. So
that's the beauty of our relationship too, is that it was never just like we're individuals. It was, we're a team, together. We always had the same goal and we're always aligned with that. So, having someone that you're able to, be another hustler with, like two hustlers are better than one. That's my favorite saying.
Yeah.
And if you can hustle towards the same goal, like who better than to do it with than your spouse? So for us, we've been lucky. We're lucky that we met each other. Cause that was kind of, just on match.com. Very lucky.
Shout out to Match.
Should have paid for our wedding. but we've had to work hard for it together, you know? And so it's great to see, all the great success we've been able to accomplish together. But it also, gets intertwined with, family life, personal life, things like that.
Yeah. Well, the biggest thing is people have to have goals, and every day you gotta push forward towards them. People lose track of that. They get bored or stale and like for me it's like if you're not setting something higher then it's hard to wake up and be motivated. Like for me, I want to have a better body, I want to be a better father, I want to be a better husband, I want to be a better leader, and I'm going to keep pushing those. Even when I get to the next level, I'm going to keep pushing myself higher. There's never a stopping point where like I've made it, it's over.
Well, that comes back to mindset again. Is always self-analyzing and always wanting to be better just in every facet of your life. And if you can do that every single day, you're one step closer every day as long as you do that.
Speaking of goals, what are your next 5 years look like?
Definitely want to acquire probably at least a few more pieces of real estate. Not sure yet what state. Definitely, I know that I would like to. Well, we're also starting our own e-com brand. It's called The Grove Standard. And it's something that it's kind of like, it's more of a side hustle passion project for us. We have, we just have like a lot of people in our circle, a lot of friends that always ask us, like, what do you do for your skin? And what do you do for your hair? What perfume do you wear? What this? Yeah, his hair all the time. And so, you know, we thought, you know what, why don't we start our own for the things that we're passionate about? And, you know, kind of we're starting to go down that path at this point. So, you know, moving more into that as well, you know, again, kind of like a side hustle passion project. And then I know you're trying to really move more into the development game and international game. And I think you're already making those moves at this point. So
I mean, we're working on a TV show right now, actually, with Glenn Stearns and his wife and another high level couple. But we're doing a power couples mentor show. It's called Vows to Ventures. And it's going to be us taking on other couples, like we're the mentors, the three couples, and we're going to take other mentees that run business together that are a couple, and we're going to help them take their business to the next level, you know, from marketing, business mindset, and crown the next power couple and make it positive, make it entrepreneur, make it what America needs right now is hope. What the American dream really stands for is coming from nothing and growing something special, an empire, building something that's a legacy. That's what we believe in, but we want to do it in a positive manner. So we already got some feedback from Fox and Netflix is actually getting pitched this week as well.
Sweet.
That's been a big passion project for us because we believe in it. Like for me, like I would love to help the world be more positive and it helps us, you know, get a bigger audience to do so. The hotel developments, like that's kind of been, you know, kind of weird that now this, my dream is to do this huge hotel project, but I'm doing them and it is my dream and I love it. Now I'm going around the world looking at new sites and new projects. But what we do is we find projects that have been dismantled or not done correctly.
Distressed. And
we pick them up and we put it all together. So think of it like packaging. I'm going to bring the investor, the casinos, the operators, kind of like that, but on a high level and package it together and we sell them off. But at the end of the day, it's a business model. Like most people, how do you put it all together to make sure it runs functionally, operates, builds it and sell it off? Right. So that's that I'm, you know, getting into that world and it's exciting. So those are some of the bigger projects we're working on right now.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, you are passionate about it. You guys love what you do. I love it. You can see that. You can hear it. You can feel it. So that's awesome. Congrats on that.
Thank you
so much.
Yeah. And where do we find you? Someone's trying to get close to you guys or like find out more about, you know, what you're doing. And
yeah, my IG is CEO Groves Capital and I'm on all the social media IG and another favorite one.
TikTok.
Yeah. TikTok or grovescapital.com or LinkedIn, of course, as well.
Yeah.
Very cool.
And I'm Instagram, Elena Groves.
Awesome. Well, reach out and say hi and thanks for coming on the show. And please, if you can, please do me a favor, like it, share it, subscribe it, tell others about this podcast. This is how we grow. We appreciate you making it all the way through to this very great ending of this podcast, and we'll see you on the next one. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having us. Appreciate you.
Yeah.
This was great. Fun.
Let's have some tequila now.
Yes!
Do you want to try it?
Yeah.
The $1 Million Mortgage Experience Podcast.